early actions can be taken to protect the business critical application from failure, thereby avoiding downtime and data loss. So three critical elements play a key role in terms of disaster avoidance. First, you need to know that a disaster is coming. Now, although this is a key point, but then you never know when the disaster really strikes, right? So that is the reason why you have to be prepared all the time. You have to architect your systems so that whenever there is a failure, your backup system should be ready to trigger to that load. Most often than not, what happens is that your DR is not 100% replication of your DC. Or probably if your DC has, say for example, 10 application servers, your DR would have only 5 application servers. So in this case, if it is running at a peak load and the DC fails, that means the DR will be just be able to cater to 50% of the load, right? So that is the kind of DR strategy that I was talking about. You should have an eye on what is the business that you are into, how critical is that business and how critical is that downtime, and then create a DR strategy. Many companies have an active data center and a DR, right? So again, that depends upon the business needs. And the second key aspect is the two facilities should be close to each other so as to perform a live migration. Now, there is a functionality in VMware which calls it as vMotion. That means if there is a resource failure in the primary data center, then a backup of that resource is created on the DR, and the time it takes for the packet to travel between DC to DR is the latency time. Right, so this vMotion basically is a functionality that creates the resources in the backup region. So that is another point. And the third point is the data carrying link. The application workload between the DCs should be big enough to carry all the memory pages. So basically all the data that is there between the DC and the DR, the link, the data center replication link, remember the diagram that we discussed, the DC to DR replication link, it has to be sized accordingly so that the data gets replicated in the true sense. So although the disaster avoidance includes the term disaster, this process can be used for maintenance also. So usually companies have a periodic downtime, so to check whether the DR system is in place or not, are the backup systems working or not. So they have a planned downtime, as it is said. There are many a times where you may migrate a workload to another data center for your routine maintenance, so just to check whether the systems are up and running. Active data centers. So I mentioned this point in the previous slide, right? So depending upon the business need, a company might have something called as an active data center. So what are these? So rather than running application in one data center with another for the backup, so if you have two data centers, one as a DC, one as the DR, some businesses choose the option to distribute the applications more than in one data center. So I could use both the data centers as active. Now just understand one thing, every business would want to use this as a active setup, but then the cost it takes, the DNS entries it takes for the data centers to be active is really huge. So again, the decision between cost, the business requirements, it has to be balanced properly before architecture in place. So if you have two data centers, you can run some applications on data center 1 and some on data center 2, so that you can have a perfect load balancing between the two. Or the same application could operate and run from both the data centers in a scale out fashion. Yeah. So this is again one of the strategies. Both are considered active data center model because the two data centers are actively used and the resources are not sitting idle. Data loss and recovery time are expected to be zero or near zero because both are active and both act as backups to each other, right? The design of an active model is different from a compute storage application and network perspective than a traditional design. So I already mentioned that. RTO RPO. So again, whenever you see the term RTO RPO, see the term data center, these two terms will always haunt you. So I want you to be crystal clear with these two terms. So I've already told you what RTO and RPO was, but it's good to reiterate these facts. So recovery time objective is the time it takes the application to come back after a planned or unplanned downtime. So again, if you have say a RTO of 4 hours, and if the data center outage happened at 8 o'clock, that means 12 o'clock the system should be up and running. Backup technologies at the host application or storage level are also used to decrease the RPO. Now understand one thing, from the company's perspective, it is always best to have a zero RTO and a zero RPO. Correct. Now from a company, say I would say if I'm the company, so I would always want my system to be up and running, right? So even if there is an outage, I would want the next second the DR to be triggered and start working. But then and similar is the case with the RPO. The recovery point should be absolutely zero so that the transactions are recorded everywhere and I don't see a loss in business. But then to devise a 100% zero downtime, a 100% up system, it really requires a lot of money. So just imagine the case of say Amazon, Flipkart, eBay, right? So they have to take a very judicious decision saying that a 5 minutes of outage in the website can lead to what kind of business loss. And this kind of decision is then business decision then translates into the cost. And because cost is an important aspect when you design a solution, these aspects have to be taken care of. So it's actually a trade-off between the business needs and the actual solution design. So RTO, RPO, from a business perspective, it should be absolutely zero. But then to get a zero RTO, RPO system, it requires a lot of cost to design a system like that. So to support active data centers, avoid traffic hairpinning and provide read-write capability to the storage, you may want to implement a storage solution. So again, active data centers, so because both of them are active, the database or the storage appliance should also have that facility that, you know, both of them can write at the same time and the database could be accessed at the same time. Latency should be kept within the limit of a replication to avoid poor application performance issues. So yes, this replication again is a key point when we talk about DCDR. So replication, as I said, if a copy is written in the DC, then the same copy is transferred to the DR and then the DR acknowledges and then the DC sends back this acknowledgement to the application. So this is called as a synchronous replication. In case of an asynchronous replication, it could happen anytime. So this is the power of replication. Now let us discuss the traffic scenarios in case of a data center. Right now we understood that data center has a lot of servers, a lot of storage and a lot of networking. And I'm not discussing the physical aspects like power, cooling, space, racks, cabling, so on. Right. So a lot of servers will then have a lot of traffic in between them, correct? So either it could be a east-west traffic, that is a web server talking to the DB, the web server talking to the app talking to the DB, or it could be a north-south traffic, that is the web server talking to the router and the router then talking to the end users. That's the example of a north-south traffic. So let us understand them. Applications residing in the data center can be built in many tiers. So I took an example of the three-tier web, app and DB. The three-tier application is well known and commonly implemented by developers. Applications may interact with services such as the Active Directory. So Active Directory is a place where all the records are stored, the username and passwords are stored. The DNS, that is a domain name service which converts the URL into the IP address. The DHCP. So DHCP is a service that gives the clients the IP address. So these three services are basically required in-house or they are internal. So many services like these can interact with other applications. So this is the typical east-west traffic that I'm talking about. Within or between the data centers, if the application talks with other applications or within application tiers, tiers or components with common services, then this traffic pattern is called as a east-west traffic pattern. Similarly, what is a north-south traffic pattern? So, as I said, if any traffic that is coming into the data center or going out of the data center is called as the north-south traffic pattern. Now, there are a lot of architectures in the data center. So, you have something called as the top of the rack architecture. So, top of the rack switches, then they get connected to the different servers. Then there is middle of the rack, there is end of the rack. But then a recent piece of data center architecture is gaining a lot of popularity, which is the leaf spine architecture. Now, this has been there in the market since I guess 8 to 10 years now, but then it is gaining a lot of popularity in the modern data centers nowadays. So, the leaf and the spine network architecture or the distributed core was developed to allow access to scale and to travel in the east-west routes, in addition to more traditional north-south patterns. Now, this is very interesting. Now, what really happened is, and this is based out of a study, they said that most of the traffic in a data center is east-west and not north-south, because say the web wants to talk to the app to DB, and then it might talk to different security services that could be firewalls in between. So most of the traffic within the data center, it remains within the data center. So the east-west traffic is more rather than the north-south traffic. So that is the reason why the leaf spine architecture was designed. The main idea of the leaf and spine architecture is that every leaf connects to every spine and every spine connects to every leaf. Now, this is a little confusing, so don't worry, I have a diagram in the next slide which I'll use to explain. So, but let us just understand the terminologies. In general, leaves are not connected to each other and spines are not connected to each other. So, for specific critical workloads, leaf devices can be connected to each other for providing lower latency, and there are a lot of protocols run such as Trill or Fabric Path or VXLAN. So these are some of the new layer 3 protocols. Now let us look at a typical leaf spine architecture. So what you look on the right side of your screen is a traditional 3-tier architecture. So it is access, distribution and core switches, and below the access switches the servers are connected. So in this each access switches is connected to two different aggregation switch so as to have high availability. But if you look at the diagram on your left, which is a leaf spine architecture, so all the leaf switches, these can be termed as access switches because they connect to the end servers. So the leaf switches are connected to two different spine switches. So each leaf switch gets connected to all the spine switches that are there in the network. And also one more point, the leaf switch are not interconnected to each other. So the leaf spine architecture, it gives a lot of flexibility in terms of the east-west traffic. Unlike the 3-tier architecture, which is designed for catering to the north-south traffic, the leaf spine architecture helps to serve the east-west traffic in a better way. Okay, so we now discuss enterprise data storage. Yeah, storage is an important technology. We spoke about data center, we spoke about networking, but every data, every transaction is stored. It has to be stored on some kind of storage device, right? So that's where enterprise data storage comes into picture. So storage often doesn't get the kind of attention that it deserves, which can turn out to be a costly oversight. So storage, everyone says, right, it's a dumb device, just dump all your data. But then it's not that way. It has to be architected in a proper way. Although storage is not often given the attention in the system architecture, it can actually, you know, have a very predominant effect on the entire application response time. So just imagine a situation if your database is not responsive, or if Netflix, right? So Netflix, basically it has a storage where it stores the all its movies. Now just imagine the situation if the storage appliance fails, right? You will not be able to see that movie. So it's actually business impacting, but trust me, it the Netflix architecture is not that simple that, you know, movies are stored on a normal storage device. So Netflix uses something like a content delivery network and a very complex architecture in place. So it uses Amazon Web Services, but then it's a very complex network which is designed for Netflix. Okay, so let us come back to our enterprise data storage. So I was mentioning that very often than not, storage is not given the undue importance, but then the SLA for a storage is as equally important as a server is. So understanding how to build a cost-effective, high-performance storage system can save a lot of money, not only in the storage subsystem, but in the entire data center as well. Storage system is a huge, highly specialized art with major advancements happening in the real time. To meet the escalating demand for data-intensive graphics, web applications, web transactions, and other digital firm applications, the amount of data that companies need to store is almost doubling every 18 months. Sorry, right? So, data, as we all understand, it keeps on growing, and it becomes very difficult for a company to distinguish between what is the data that it needs to keep for itself and what is the data that it needs to flush out, right? Companies are turning to newer kinds of storage infrastructures to deal with the complexity and the cost of mushrooming storage requirements. Large companies have many different storage resources, so disk drives, tape backup drives, RAID, that is a random array of some disks, and other devices that may be scattered in many different locations. This arrangement is expensive to manage and makes it difficult to access the data across the enterprise. Storage networking technology helps firms to manage all their storage resources centrally by providing an overall storage plan for all storage devices in their enterprise. There are alternative storage networking storage arrangements. Now let us discuss few of the storage technologies which are in place. So the first one, which is a very basic, is called as a DAS, that is a directly attached storage. Now directly attached storage is as similar to saying that the storage is actually present in the server. So assume that you have a laptop, and the hard disk that is contained in the laptop is kind of a directly attached storage. So it's an example, right? So a server will host a storage with itself, and that is called as a DAS. So directly attached storage devices are connected directly to the individual server and must be accessed through each server, which can create bottlenecks. Just imagine if that particular server fails, the data is lost, right? So if as a company have 100 different servers, each server will have its own storage. So it's absolutely not the best of the design, correct? Each server will have its own storage, and if that particular storage fails, then the server is again useless. If that particular server fails, then obviously the storage cannot be used. So what if there is a common pool of those storage devices which could be accessed by all the different servers, right? So that is the next one that we will discuss, that is a network attached storage. But so you would have understood what a DAS is, a directly attached storage devices that are connected to the individual servers and must be accessed through that server only. Directly attached storage is the most basic storage subsystem that provides block data storage, and it's a building block for any DAS or a NAS. Now, redundant array of inexpensive disks. I missed the full form in the previous slide. So, RAID. Now, RAID is used when you would want to have a lot of redundancy in place. And there are different RAID techniques. So, there is RAID 0, which is splitting. Then there is RAID 1, which is mirroring. Then there is RAID 1.0, that is splitting and mirroring. There is RAID 5. And so on. So RAID basically is a technology which is used to have redundancy in place. The next we'll discuss something called as the SAN, or the storage area network. Now what happens is because the DAS had a lot of problems because it was attached to the same server, so people thought that let us have one more system in place where you could have a common set of storage across different servers. Now, so that is where NAS and SAN are brought in. So NAS offers a higher level of functionality than DAS because it permits multiple hosts to attach to a single storage at the block level. Now there are two important elements here in storage that needs to be considered. One is a block level storage and one is a file level storage. A file level storage is any file that you see. So it could be a Word file, a PPT, a movie file, so everything is a file. But when we talk about database, so database is a block level storage, it's not a file level storage, right? So SAN works on the block level. Now let us also look at NAS, right? So I mentioned that DAS is no good, it's no longer used now. So let us look at DAS and SAN. So NAS is basically a place which is called as a network attack storage. So what really happens is that if you have a LAN network, a network in place, and if you attach a storage which could be used by all the servers, so that is called as a NAS. So attaching a high speed RAID storage device to a network so that the device in the network can access the storage through specialized server dedicated to file and storage, so that is called as a NAS. The SAN was operating at a block level, NAS operates at a file level. NAS again, you require a lot of fiber channel switches, so there is something called as a FC SAN, fiber channel SAN, and then there are different speeds to it. And NAS is network attached, so it's used in the network, but then SAN could be accessed from anywhere because it's actually a storage of networks, and this is a network attached storage. Then we talk about something called as the storage management. So storage management is basically the management process that encompasses the technologies and process organization use to maximize or improve the performance of the storage resources. So what happens is you could define a lot of backup policies through storage management. You could have a lot of storage policies, a lot of replication policies that could be defined as a part of the storage management. So storage management, basically it's an orchestration layer over your storage devices, which helps what should be the frequency of backups, when should it be backed up, and so on, right? So you understood the different storage technologies. So let us look at a diagram of all the three. So the first one that you see on your left is a directly attached storage. So you see a LAN, there are different clients that are accessing the servers, and the server has a storage that is directly attached. So that is called as a directly attached storage or a DAS. The second is a NAS. So NAS is a network attached storage. So you see there are different clients that are connected to each other through a Ethernet switch. And on the switch you connect a NAS storage because it's a network attached. So everything is part of the common network, and that is a NAS storage. And the last and the most complicated and the most widely used is the SAN or the storage area network. So what really happens is that there are clients, they're connected over a LAN environment, you have the Ethernet switch which gets connected to the servers. And the servers are connected to something called as a SAN switch. Now this SAN switch is a fiber channel switch, so basically it communicates over a fiber channel protocol, and this then connects over the physical storage, so which is a SAN device. So what you see is the RAID array and the storage appliance, so that connects to the SAN switch. So this is the SAN storage that I'm talking about. So DAS is the most basic, no longer used. NAS used by mid-market companies, mid-sized companies, and NAS is the most advanced and is used everywhere, and the best performance is given by a SAN system. Now nowadays you have some hybrid systems in place, so there's a combination of NAS plus SAN, so it's a little complicated, but then these are the three broad level of storages that we see in the market. some of the emerging technologies that we see as far as storage devices are concerned. So there is something called as the 3D NAND. So it's kind of a flash memory. Now we all understand that flash memory and SSDs are the fastest, right? So it's a type of flash memory in which the memory cells are stacked vertically in multiple layers. Flash manufacturers develop 3D NANDs to address challenges that were encountered in scaling the 2D NAND technology to achieve higher density at a lower cost per bit. The next is erasure coding. So it's a method of data protection in which data is broken down into fragments, expanded and encoded with redundant data pieces and stored across a set of different locations or storage media. So probably you'll have to, you know, deep dive into it if you're interested in, you know, getting more details around it. Helium devices. It's a type of hard disk that leverages the lightness of helium gas to increase the medium's high potential and storage density. So as the name suggests, it gives rise to a lot of commercially viable storage. Then there is shingled magnetic recording, or the SMR. It's a new technology in which hard drives that allows the tracks to be plotted on layer on top of each other. So what generally used to happen is that it basically runs around in one particular cycle, right? But then this particular SMR technology, it helps to develop layers on top of each other so as to have densely populated storage in place. Then there is something called as NVMe, that is Non-Volatile Memory Express. Now this is the technology which is used in all flash memories and SSDs, which is really fast. So it's a storage technology that jointly developed by Intel and Micro Technology. This technology is expected to fill a gap in the storage market between a RAM and a NAND flash. So flash again is the fastest, but NVMe as a technology is the super fast, the super cool, the flash drives that we talk about. The last that we will talk about is the HAMR, or the heat assisted magnetic recording. So this is considered as the next big step forward. This is a magnetic technology for drastically increasing the amount of data that could be stored on a hard drive by temporarily heating the material, the disk material, while writing on it. This makes the hard disk material far more receptive to magnetic effects, and thereby large amounts of data can be written into small pieces. So in case of the data storage market, it's basically packing a lot of data into small devices, right? So that's where flash come into picture, and heat assisted magnetic recording come into picture. Some of the other changes that are expected in the storage market are containers. Now these are not the physical containers, but then these are virtual containers. So if you would have seen something like Docker, so Docker works on containers. So there is a very important containerization concept that probably you can look up to. Then there are machine learning algorithms which actually help to compress the data as they come in the storage systems. Which data are used frequently, they are categorized, which data can be used less frequently, they could be archived, so on. So these are some of the machine learning algorithms. And then there is management as a service. So entire data management as a service is being offered by companies. There are a lot of cloud storage technologies which have emerged of late. So AWS has something called as Amazon S3, and it is a storage service. It's a cloud based storage, so you only pay for the storage capacity on the cloud. You don't have to invest into any kind of on-premise resources. So that is the Amazon storage, and then it also has the archival systems in place and so on. So these are again some of the new changes that are expected in the storage market.